Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. So today's the one pra, the half moon, the rising moon, coming up to a week away from Katina, which would be the full moon. And Longpa Pasano is away in Portland, well, actually in Pacific Hermitage, for Papa. And then Ajahn Karunadamo, second monk, has been away since yesterday teaching a day-long retreat in Santa Cruz. He'll be coming back later tonight. Third monk, Ajahn Jodi Palo, is on his two-week solitary retreat. So it falls to the fourth monk to give a Dhamma talk this evening. I think it's good to note that there's a lot of good people here this evening. It's really great to see everybody is interested in Dhamma, interested in practice, interested in just coming to the monastery and seeing what it's all about, plugging into the routine, joining in with the meditation, learning about the meditation, learning about practice, just incredibly wholesome, incredibly good thing to be doing in the world. Lots of good questions at tea time, good Dhamma discussion. Yes, something to rejoice in, something to be happy about. So I was thinking about what to talk about this evening and flipping through the Anguttara Nikaya today and came across a little sutta in the Book of Threes, just a very short sutta on friendship. And it's just the Buddha saying, bhikkhus, you should associate with a person with these three qualities. What three? You should associate with someone who gives what is hard to give. You should associate with someone who does what is hard to do. And you should associate with someone who endures what is hard to endure. And that's the kind of person you should associate with. And so someone who gives what is hard to give, that's generosity. There's four types of generosity. There's vatu dana, which is the giving of material support, giving of things, giving of food. There's kama dana, which is giving of service, work, doing things for other people. There's abhaya dana, which is the giving of fearlessness. And there's Dhamma Dana, the giving of the Dhamma, giving of truth, giving of the deathless. So Vatu Dana, the giving of things, giving of material support. This has different gradations as well. When we give something, sometimes we might be inclined to give something just to get rid of it. Just, it's something we don't want. We just want to get rid of it. That's one kind of giving. Another kind of giving is giving something because it's the best of what we have. Giving the best food, giving away our best Leatherman, not just the one we don't want. Giving away our best MP3 player, not just the one that we're not going to keep. And so that's another type of giving, which is higher, better than the previous type. Giving away our best flashlight, our best headlamp, as call to mind the barefoot shoemaker is making the best shoes for everybody else. He himself going around barefoot. So giving food, we see the people coming, making the meal, giving dana, the monastery on a daily basis, making the best they can, giving the best of what they have. It's quite amazing that it just keeps happening every single day. And then we chant the meal blessing every day. At Burkin in Canada, Ajahn Sona does it in English, but we do it in Pali here. But the meaning in brief is that four things accrue to one who gives alms food: long life, beauty, happiness, and strength. It's the karmic result of giving alms food. And a lot of people who come here, I've noticed that some people don't have much resources and they aren't rich, but still they're really giving what they can. And that falls into the class of giving what is hard to give. Or when I was on Tudong with Tanti Tapo and being taken in by this woman, Alina, in Trinidad, and she's quite poor and just getting by, actually had no money at all, but was just working at a resort so that they would give a place to stay in return for the work. And yet showed incredible hospitality to us and gave us a place to stay, incredible meals. So giving what is hard to give. And then there's the giving of service. So we might not have money, we might not be able to give food or give in that way, but we can give service, give time, do something kind for someone else. It's like Garmin, the guys who operate the heavy machinery here and do the roads and do the earthwork. They've gotten together and decided to do our roads as an act of dana this year. And so they'll be redoing our roads all the way up to the ridge, grading our roads, leveling them, getting out the ruts, and we'll pay for the gravel, the road base. Otherwise, they're giving their time, they're giving service. It's a really incredible offering because these are working class people. They live north of Willits, at Locals. And just from the depths of their heart wanting to give something, not because they're Buddhist or because we're Buddhist or because they feel pressured in any way, but it's just a completely spontaneous offering. That is a very large offering as well, something which is difficult to give. Then there's Abhaya Dana, giving of fearlessness. Abhaya has a double meaning. Abhaya is fearlessness, but it's also forgiveness. So the giving of forgiveness is the giving of fearlessness. So Abhayagiri could also be called Forgiveness Mountain. We call it Fearless Mountain, but it could be Forgiveness Mountain as well. And say you hold a grudge towards somebody, or you've had a disagreement or some sort of long-term dispute with somebody, that other person is going to be afraid you might take revenge or hurt them in some way, do something to undermine their life. Then when you genuinely forgive that person for whatever they may have done to you, that person doesn't have to be afraid anymore that you might take revenge on them or do something to undermine them in some way, blackmail them, sue them, or, you know, if you've genuinely forgiven someone, there's trust there, so that's a giving of fearlessness. Also, the undertaking of the five precepts or the eight precepts, this is also a giving of fearlessness. Taking on the precept to refrain from taking the life of any living creature, this gives fearlessness to all living beings, all living creatures. There's one less being in the world who will intentionally take the life of a living being. Refraining from taking that which is not given, so not stealing. And people trust you. People know that this person is not going to steal from me. I don't have to be wary of this person. So that too is a giving of fearlessness, taking on that precept. Not engaging in sexual misconduct. So there's trust there. One's partner doesn't have to think, oh, he or she's going to be cheating on me. This person's trustworthy. They've taken on that precept. That doesn't have to be that fear there. Not telling lies or engaging in harsh speech. Don't have to be afraid this person's going to yell at me or lie to me. So again, trust, fearlessness. Taking of intoxicants. The way the fifth precept is in Pali, it specifically refers to drink, alcohol, liquor. And so somebody's taken on that precept, automatically you don't have to be like, oh, you know, Doug's hammered again. He's gonna come do something, you know, he's gonna come and punch some walls in or something. You don't have to, you know, that person's taken on that precept. So don't have anything to fear from them, drunkenness or just the drunk drivers. You know, that person's not going to be driving drunk, so, you know, you may be completely mindful, completely sober driving on the road. A drunk driver can just come out of nowhere. So there's, you know, at least one less person is going to be driving drunk on the road. And the merit of and virtue that comes from taking on these precepts and giving fearlessness to all living beings, that's no small thing. I think the result of keeping these precepts, it's at first it's imperceptible, and it takes time really to start to notice that the merit and virtue is building up in the background, but it's immaterial, so we don't notice it. But the level of contentment and happiness is going to become more and more over time. Then there's Dhamma Dana, giving of Dhamma, giving of truth. So this is not only giving Dhamma talks, but setting a good example, the person who automatically comes to mind is Lungpo Liam. Just his whole life is just Dhamma Dana, just watching him go about his day, watching him work, watching the way he relates to people. A great monk like that, every moment of his day is Dhamma Dana. The highest form of giving, the giving of the deathless, giving of truth. But also there's a way that those of us who aren't at that high stage of practice can be engaging in Dhamma Dana. And that's just books, book distribution. I know our intrepid book mailers, there's Iris, Tim, Nook, Jandira, sending books to just so many people who request books, but also to prisoners. And just, even if just one person out of all the people that you've sent books to, even if just one person, one prisoner gains benefit or takes up the practice of virtue or concentration or wisdom based on that book that was sent to them, the merit and virtue accruing from that is incredible. And that's true Dhamma Dana. That's bringing people into the fold of the Dhamma who previously weren't aware of that availability of the Dhamma. So book mailing, that's just no small thing. I know in the past our book mailers have gotten letters from people, from prisoners, just gratitude. And all these kinds of dana take time, take effort. Giving what is difficult to give. And someone who gives what is difficult to give is a worthy friend, someone who should be associated with. And then there's the person who does what is difficult to do. So on that level, just sense restraint, renunciation, meditation. Meditation falls into the category of doing what is difficult to do. Training the mind. So we sit down to meditate. The mind is just, for most of us, just all over the place at first. And there's this incredible momentum, this forward energy in the mind. And so just being willing to sit down, meditate, and do the practice. And just to keep pulling the mind back to the breath. Or to buddho, if we're using that meditation word. And you just have to keep at it, constantly. I know I was meditating tonight, just starting to think, the mind thinking, what am I going to say tonight? What is the talk going to be like? And then just coming back. So whatever is coming up in the mind, whatever monologue, just coming back to the breath. It might feel like, oh, I've already come back to the breath 100 times, 200 times in this meditation. I'm just going to let my mind go, just let it wander, just let it follow these proliferations. But no, just do what is difficult to do. Just come back to the breath. or staying up till 3:30 or 4 a.m. once a week on the Wanpra. So here at Abhayagiri, the monastic community will stay up till at least 3:30 a.m. every Wanpra, unless there's some sort of big work project happening or something we have to do on the day after Wanpra. But for the most part, we're keeping that practice. So for most people, there will be a certain point in the night when the hindrance of drowsiness will come up. For myself, it's about 11 p.m. is when I crash, because I'm more an early morning person. For others, it'll be different times. And just being able to sit up through that period or be doing walking meditation. And the drowsiness would just be so strong. Just want to go lie down. Just that's all one cares about. You're doing walking meditation. Butto, butto, boot with the right foot, toe with the left foot. And then you're doing butto, butto. And then your meditation word changes to go to sleep, go to sleep, go to sleep, go to sleep. And then you start walking towards your kuti, and then wait a minute, I gotta walk back. And sometimes the mind is so tired on the Wanpra that there's just nothing you can do. You just go and do walking meditation, feel the cold air, and just the mind is so drowsy in that moment. And it comes in waves. So the mind will be really drowsy, wanting to go to sleep for 20 or 30 minutes, and then want to feel better for 20 or 30 minutes, so go back and forth. Sometimes the mind is so tired you just can't even hold on to the meditation object. But you just have to have just bare mindfulness, just seeing what's happening, getting interested in what the mind is like when it's tired. And why is it like that? Why is it so tired? What's happening there? Or you'll be sitting, just nodding. But that's okay. Just, you know, as soon as you notice yourself nodding, just sit straight in the back. Bring up the energy. Bring up a perception of light. Then the nodding will happen again. And then you just keep coming back, just doing what is difficult to do, just waking yourself up again and again. And it's helpful that we do it as a community. It's even more difficult if you're on retreat. You think, it's the Wanpra, a solitary retreat, I should stay up all night. And then you're already in your kuti. Bed is just 2 feet away. Much more difficult. So if you're able to do that, then you're doing what is really, really difficult to do. Unless you get into some deep state of samadhi, then you can just sit up all night, no problem. But most of us aren't there yet. Living a community and sustaining good relations with everybody else in the community, that's also something which is difficult to do. In a monastery, there's all different types of personalities who come together, live in the monastery. And so there's a tendency, really, to start to define each other. This monk is like that, this laywoman's like that, this layman's like that, this anagarika's like that. And so at tea time, we were talking about anatta, not self. That's just a really important one, just not defining each other. Really important for communal harmony, but also difficult to do. It's so easy to think, this person is an anger type, this person's a greed type, that's who they are. this is the guy that doesn't like me. That's who he is. And then there's enduring what is difficult to endure. The thing that automatically comes to my mind is there's a sutta that was right next to this sutta about the three qualities a good friend should have. And that was the three ways in which people are like three different types of lines. And there's the person who is like a line etched in stone, the person who is like a line etched in the dirt, and there's the person who is like a line etched in the water. And the person who is like a line etched in stone is when angry, disagreeable words are spoken to that person, or when that person is insulted, criticized unjustly, then they hold on to that criticism and unjust treatment for a long time, like a line etched in stone. Decades, possibly even, holding a grudge, being unable to forgive that person. So their mind is like a line etched in stone. Then the person who's like a line etched in the ground, they're criticized, disagreeable words, harsh words are spoken to them, possibly blamed for something they didn't do. They hold on to it for a little while, but just like the line in the ground, the wind covers it over, it erodes away. So after a while, it's okay. They hold on to it for a while, but they're able to practice with it, deal with it. Then the person who's like a line etched in water, that's the one who is able to endure what is difficult to endure. So that's the person who, when you speak angry, harsh words to them, blame them, treat them unjustly, still that person won't even hold on to it, even for a second. And they'll still be kind and cordial with that person who criticized them. And they'll still approach them and praise them, speak nice words to them in response to that criticism. They'll be kind, loving kindness, compassion for that person who is criticizing them. They may even be thankful for the criticism. So that's a really necessary quality for living in community. I remember when I was one or two vasa, walking into the library one day, and a monk was talking to a layperson around the corner in the library, and they were criticizing me. And I walked in on them when they were criticizing me. And I think at that time, my mind was like the line etched in dirt. So held on to it for a while and then thought about it. And, well, you know, I'm living with this person, eventually able to forgive them. So it's very difficult just to have that mind like a line etched in water, just to not even hold on to it at all. There's also other things which are difficult to endure. It's heat and cold, mosquitoes, horseflies, ants, going hungry. We have enough to eat currently, but sometime in the future, there may be a time where we do have to endure hunger. Or there's work project on. This happens more at Wat Bapong than here, but you might be inclined to stop or quit. it's arduous, difficult to keep working, difficult to keep going. But just pushing yourself a little bit past that comfort zone. Just developing Kanti Parami, the patient endurance. The Buddha said that patient endurance is the supreme incinerator of the defilements. So that's just a great way to be working against and wearing away our greed, hatred, and delusion, our selfishness, our sense of self, just wearing it away through patient endurance over time. Just the daily schedule, so morning puja, work period, meal, practicing in the afternoon, evening puja, practicing in the evening, wanpra, weekly, all-night sit, just over time, just patiently enduring, just deepening the practice. Or after the meal, just how difficult it is to stay awake sometimes after the meal. Just going back to one's kuti, and how difficult is it to not give in to that impulse to lie down. It's something which is difficult to endure. There's also an interesting sutta in the Samyutta Nikaya, the Buddha talking about arousing energy after the meal. And he said that the one who endures and dispels drowsiness after the meal is one for whom the path becomes clear. And this all goes back to associating with good friends as the beginning of the path. And so if you're associating with people who have those qualities, you know, great teachers like Lungpor Liem or Lungpor Pasano, associating with people who give what is difficult to give, do what is difficult to do, endure what is difficult to endure, we might in time develop those qualities in ourselves. And those two monks I just mentioned, Lungpor Liem, Lungpor Pasano, and others, Lungpor Sumedho, a number of these great monks truly give what is difficult to give, just completely giving themselves. Yeah, Ajahn Pasano, just bhikkhu of great sacrifice, just if you look at his history, just having literally sacrificed himself for the sake of the Dhamma. Lungpor Liem, just sacrificing himself for the sake of the Sangha, giving what is difficult to give. Or it's like in the evening chanting, to the Buddha I dedicate this body and life, and in devotion I will walk the Buddha's path of awakening. To the Dhamma I dedicate this body and life, and in devotion I will walk this excellent way of truth. To the Sangha I dedicate this body and life, and in devotion I will walk the well-practiced way of the Sangha. And so ultimately just giving of oneself, giving up of oneself. It's good to associate with people who are able to practice like that. So I'll offer that for reflection this evening. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.